We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to 755
Forever.
I am David O'Brien, Braves writer at The Athletic, among my co-host, former Braves reliever Eric O'Flaherty. What's happening, Eric?
You're still getting used to that new name, huh?
I almost did it again, didn't I? But I got it. We did it so many times. I mean,
yep.
We did a lot of those.
Yeah, we did.
So, as I was saying to you before we went on, before we started recording, I was right about the 5-1 trip to Miami and Houston. I just had it reversed. I thought they would sweep the Marlins and take 2 of 3 from Houston. Houston is playing bad, like poorly right now. I think they're going to be a lot better. They get Verlander back Friday, so there's probably good timing on the Braves' part. And their bullpen certainly has got to get better. I mean, Hader shit the bed in the 9th inning in Game 2. A couple of other guys gave up. They just play bad baseball for the most part. They're not getting a whole lot of – they got some offense. They scored some runs, but not a whole lot. But they've got way too much talent to be down there where they are right now. Like, what – however, what is it, 10 games under 500?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to play good, too, to win that division. You know, Texas is a pretty good team.
Or, like, I'm sorry, like five, like six games. They're like 6-10, right? Something like that. They're like 5-8 games under 500, whatever they are. They've only won 6 games. Meanwhile – the Braves, man, it was a hell of a trip considering all that happened, considering that you had Strider getting surgery the day before the trip started, out for the season, considering you lost your all-star second baseman in the first game here and played the last 2 games without him in Houston, and he's out. Ozzie's out for indefinitely. It won't be like when he broke his foot because it didn't break the bone in half. He didn't hear a crack or anything. The way he characterized it to me, it sounded like a hairline fracture type thing. Kind of like Arcia. Arcia's was a micro fracture, which I think is kind of a really small version of a hairline.
Yeah.
But Arcia was back, remember, faster than anybody thought. He was back like 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
This is weight bearing to a degree. I mean, it's big toe. I know they'll put something hard around it probably and all that. And but he was walking around the clubhouse today. He took the boot off the last 2 days. Because he was in uniform during a game and he was walking around after showering with his slides on and nothing on the toe at all. So, I mean, if that's any indication, it wasn't like real swollen up and taped up or anything.
That's a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, I'd guess a month, but maybe give or take a half week, a week on either side of that. But that's what I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably one of those things that you could almost even play through, but risk it turning into,
right,
you know, a big problem. And so you got to do it right. But it hurts. It hurts not having him. We say it all the time, but he's probably, for me, the most overlooked player on the team.
Yeah. And he was having a great year, too. And he's just such a perfect piece when he's hitting like this for that two-hole. Because his speed, after you get Acuña hasn't been Acuña so far. He has 9 stolen bases now, leading the majors, and he got his first homer today, though. So it's probably just – he's probably starting to come out of it now. But when Acuña wasn't doing Acuña things, having Ozzie in that two-hole almost gives you 2 leadoff guys before you get to the big thumpers there. And Ozzie's got power, too, obviously. He's a 25-homer guy. So if you get Acuña going while Ozzie's out, I think it picks up for it. And the other guys keep doing what they're doing, of course. I mean, Ozuna's just unconscious right now. The good thing is they got this depth, and they're not like crossing their fingers and bringing some minor leaguer up that they hope's ready to play second base. You got Guillorme and you got Fletcher. And we saw today, they stuck Fletcher in at the end of the game. They pinch hit and did a double switch, and Fletcher took over at the end of the game and turned that double play at the end. He's better defensively than Ozzie is.
Is he?
He really is. He's really slick. He played all over the infield. He played third, short, and second at spring training. And I didn't see him make a bad play. I saw him make a great play or more at each of those positions. And Guillorme's solid, too, at second base. So
yeah, it's huge having guys that have some experience at the major league level. You know, it's you call guys up, you have no clue what you're going to get. These guys, you know, they're not going to be overwhelmed, and they can fill in until you get them back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously these guys are not anywhere near. I mean, there's a huge drop-off offensively, huge.
Yeah.
But defensively, yeah, I think Fletcher's better than Ozzie, and Guillorme's probably close to it. Ozzie doesn't have a good arm at this stage of his career. And if this year he's even made a few kind of mistakes, non-throwing mistakes. So not that he's bad second base, but he's not a gold glove type guy. And Fletcher is really good defensively. So if they just hold the fort down defensively – and, you know, not be horrible, but they're going to be hit at the bottom of the lineup. You got Harris now in the two-hole. What another luxury to be able to move a guy like Harris up from the bottom half of your order to the two-hole.
Yeah, what if he sticks? You know, because Ozzie hits for power, too, and he's been in different spots in the lineup throughout his career. It's like, I mean, you could, like we said last, you could hit shuffle on this lineup, and you throw a good lineup out there, but you have a surplus of offense. So if you can have these guys just get the job done defensively and play solid defense and get the outs you're supposed to get, they should be fine.
Harris against right-handers, man, that's pretty lethal in that second spot.
Yeah.
I mean, he wrecks.
He handles lefties, too. He handles them fine. He
does. Yeah, he does. He hasn't produced the numbers this year that he did in the past, but yeah, he does. He handles them fine. I think what we saw from – I'm convinced now on Lopez. It's nothing fluky about what he's doing. This dude's a stud. I mean, he's got three starts. He's gone six innings in every one of them, and he's given up 4, 3, and 4 hits. He's given up one run, and that was in the first one in the cold and rain at Chicago. He's got an 0.50 ERA. It's the second lowest in the majors among qualified pitchers.
Yeah, they must have seen something in him, you know, that they thought. And I think a lot of times it's kind of a good transition to get your feet under you in the bullpen.
That's what
you just realize, like, I can get anybody out. You know, you wind up in the bullpen, you only got to see Trout once or whoever it happens to be. You see him once, you know, you can get him out. But a lot of times when guys get called up, maybe starting is just too much exposure or too much to bite off initially, combined with, you know, being trying to figure out the league and calm yourself down. The bullpen's such shorter stints, you can start having success and you know you can pitch here. And then when you go back to starting, I think you see what it can turn into with him.
It really helped that they told him, the Braves kind of not downplayed it, but they said, yeah, we're going to get him stretched out and we'll decide at spring training what role he's in. They told him he's starting. So
right
when they signed him, they said, they assured him, you're going to get a chance to start.
Yeah.
It wasn't we'll get you stretched out and then decide at spring training which role's best for us. He was going to get a chance. So that's what he was fully preparing for. So that gave him a chance to work on that curveball, which he used to throw as a starter, but he really didn't throw much at all as a reliever. That's been a big difference maker. I mean, that's another shaped pitch than what he was throwing.
Yeah, and I think solid.
Three pitches, and that's all I think he needs. And I've just been impressed that he hasn't gone out there in the first inning – throwing 100 miles an hour. And, you know, in the third inning, second time through or third time through at the most, getting rocked because his velocity's falling. He's going out there and pitching like a starter. He's throwing like 95, mixing his pitches. And the fastball command's been great.
Everything's been great.
Yeah.
He is pitching, though. And that's what, you know, I didn't get too excited when they got him because it's a guy throwing 100. And I'm like, well, we'll see. You know, that's a different transition, just blowing people's doors off for an inning at a time versus guys seeing you multiple times a game and having to mix it up and catch them off balance, not letting them sit on stuff. And as a reliever, you can walk to an inning and still have pretty good run. But as a starter, it's like you can't have those blow up innings. One of them will turn into a big one. So I wasn't too excited just hearing about his stuff. But after the first game I watched him pitch, I was like, okay, this guy's like, he's pitching like a starter. He's not trying to blow hitters away. He's making pitches.
I was just glancing at his stats, and I just happened to notice in the front, he's already got 1.2 WAR. I mean, for his career, it was 7 WAR before this year. 3 starts. That's the difference in what WAR awards for starters compared to relievers, that's for sure. But 18 strikeouts in 18 innings, giving up no hits. I mean, he's just I think the only big question mark still is his hasn't thrown 70 innings since 2019 when he had back-to-back years as a starter. This is what Alex said they also thought about when they signed him. The last 2 years when he was a full-time starter, the only 2 years in the majors when he's a full-time starter, he went 32 and 33 starts and had 188 innings and 184 innings. So they knew he's a horse, and that was back when he's a far more mature pitcher now than he was back then.
Yeah.
And they really thought what has transpired, they thought had a chance to transpire. And Ronaldo has talked about how he wishes he, like what you were saying, he wishes he knew all the stuff he learned in the pen. He wishes he knew the first time he was starting. He said the bullpen, the experience in the bullpen has really helped him become a better starter.
I think the biggest advantage is you learn how to pitch out of jams and situations, and you learn how to pitch, and I can't give up a run or what my out pitches are. I mean, you just learn so much because there's no room for error. You learn what your strengths are. Then you go back to starting and you get in a jam. It's like, I've been here a million times. And the thing that I like about him, just watching him pitch, is I think he's going to be okay, you know, with the load, like managing his load and everything, because he's not overthrowing. It's
right.
If he was throwing 100 and had the exact same outcome and numbers and everything, and his first year in a while throwing 200 innings or 160 innings, something like that, I'd say, you know, August and September might be tough, but the effort level he's at is just beautiful.
And I don't know if it's apparent on TV because he's one of those guys that's bigger than he looks on TV because he's so perfectly proportioned.
Yeah.
He's a big dude.
Yeah.
He's far bigger than most starters. He's put together. He's like not fat, but he's tall. He's put together. And so I think that's going to help him handle this load too. So we asked Snit, you know, because they've been really careful and they've been lucky because of the off days and the weather games. So what's happened is he's pitched exactly once per week. He's pitched the 9th, the 16th, or the 2nd, the 9th, and the 16th every week. Yep. So he's had six rest days instead of the normal. What used to be normal is 4, although the Braves are among those teams that now do 5 days more than 4.
Yeah.
You know, but with him and the other starters, most of the other starters, they're getting 6 because of all the situations they've had in the early season. But they're going to try to keep doing that with him. So tells me they're going to bring guys up like they have so far to make like a spot start and push him back. And like if they want to also push Sale back, they can do that at the same time. Give him 5 or 6 days rest every time. So Snit said, we asked Snit about, you know, could he stay in the start? He's pitching 6 innings a game. Could he really stay in the rotation all year and still be strong in October when he hasn't pitched, you know, 70 innings since 2019? Or will you guys have to move him to the pen? Bo asked him, and Snit goes, we're not even thinking about that. I mean, to be honest, we're not thinking about that yet. So what they're going to try to do is do this, what they're doing. And that'll in effect cut off, like, you know, if you get 5 or 6 days rest every time, that'll cut off like 4 starts right there, 4 or 5 starts.
I think a lot of times most starters would say, I don't like having too much rest.
Yeah.
But he's thriving with it.
So, he likes
it. It's a perfect combination. If you can give a guy those extra days and keep him fresh throughout the season and he's pitching well with it, why not? I think the only time you wouldn't want to do that, or a guy might have a problem with that extra time off, is if he feels rusty. But these starts they're crisp.
Yeah. Yeah. He said it's helped him. It's really helped him because of the, you know, the load that make the transition. He said that and the training staff, he said they've had a great program for him with all the recovery and everything. So
he thanked him. Much more now in the game. Yeah. Hyperbaric chambers and we had ice and stim.
Go jog poles. This plan works better for them than it would most teams because they have a 40-year-old. They have Chris Sale, who hasn't pitched innings in the last 4 years. And you have spot starters coming up. The only guy I think that it really wouldn't have worked with, there's two, is Strider. You wouldn't want to have 5 or 6 days rest with him.
No, you want him starting.
And Freed, once he gets going like Freed, like we know he will, but he hasn't so far. Which brings me to my next thing is, it's almost like Ronaldo Lopez has surpassed expectations and been every bit as good as Freed has underwhelmed and been bad so far. It's almost like you've got a, that's a wash right there, because you're getting so much more from Lopez than you thought you were going to get. And so far, you haven't got it from Freed, but Freed's not hurt, and he's going to be fine. It's just he has it right now. He just doesn't look like Max. He's not throwing strikes like he usually does. That's the thing I've noticed. He's not throwing nearly. He threw like 96 pitches today, 52 strikes. That's not Max Freed, man. He walked four in the first three innings. That's normally like 2 or 3 starts for him. Remember, he had the stretch last year where he walked like 3 guys in 5 starts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's probably just a tick off mechanically, or, you know, it's early in the season. I thought he looked good in Miami, but
I did too. But they're so bad, a team. It's kind of hard to gauge.
Credit.
It's kind of hard to gauge, yeah, but I did think he looked better. He looked good there.
He looked sharp. I mean, he was throwing more strikes in that game, but I don't worry about Max.
Yeah.
He's been too good for too long. His stuff looks good. I mean, Everything's crisp.
Velo's not down, all that kind of thing. Spin rates.
Yeah. It's all there.
It just isn't quite as sharp as he normally is. He doesn't have the pinpoint command. And I tell you what, Houston, even despite their bad record, they've got professional hitters over there. They work counts. They, as like he said, he had that inning where he gave up 2 runs today. He gave up 4 straight hits and had a wild pitch in there too. Single, 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 double. Got out of it with 2 runs. But he said 3 of those hits he thought were out of the strike zone. So he gave them credit for being able to stay with those pitches and get hits at them. They weren't hard hit balls. Those weren't. 3 of them weren't.
I mean, that ball Alvarez hit too, it's probably a fly out in a lot of parks.
The home run?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was the first row of the Crawford boxes.
357.
First row of the Crawford boxes, which, yeah, that's not out. And you know what? The Crawford boxes are not even as deep as that sign says they are.
I've always wanted to take a rangefinder. It looks like 278.
Yeah, it's listed like 315 down the line.
315, yeah. So it's probably three.
I bet it's below 310. It's got to be less than 310. It looks like a right on top of you, the left fielder.
Yordan Alvarez home run is a homer in 1 out of 30 parks.
That's
it. It's 347 feet.
There you go, because it was almost left center. And it was in the first row of the Crawford boxes. So that's the only place it's a home run. And what was the velo? It was like exit velo, 92?
97.
97?
97.6.
So then.
That's a hard hit ball, but it's not destroyed.
It's fly ball on the warning track, yeah.
Yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everyone. Tim Shovers, producer of the podcast here. Just want to take a second to remind you about our merchandise that is for sale at 755forever.com. That's 755forever.com. Click on the store button. We got plenty of options. Mugs, t-shirts, hoodies, slides, you name it. We got it. Also some hats. So check us out. It supports the podcast and it goes a long way to help our endeavor. Also, if you have a comment for the show or just want to check in, maybe a topic we haven't broached yet on the podcast, send us an email, 755foreverpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's 755foreverpodcast@gmail.com. Send us an email and maybe we will read it on the air. Now back to David and Eric.
You know, definitely don't want to walk four guys in the first three innings, but did a good enough job of getting some ground balls. Defense was, you know, really, really great behind me, being able to just let me work and, you know, was falling behind a lot of guys, a lot of deep counts, a lot of, you know, I think through the first three or four innings, my ball to strike ratio was pretty even. So it wasn't like I was getting ahead and, you know, staying on the attack there. It was more of trying to get weak contact behind in the count, get some jam drop ground balls.
And Ozuna comes back in the next inning and says, hold my beer. Here's how you hit a home run to left field, my man.
Yeah, Ozuna's home run was a home run in 30 of 30 parks. He hit 112.
That fucking thing was 14 feet less than Soler's World Series homer to almost that same spot.
Yeah,
that's what the measurement was, only 14 feet less than Soler's, which a lot of people will swear has still not come down.
Yeah.
I was going to crush that ball.
He's as good as I've ever seen him right now.
Oh, my God. He's so hot. I looked it up, and he had, before today, like 36 balls or 35 balls hit at 95 or above. And the next most on the Braves, like, was Riley, Olson, and Harris were all tied with, like, 27. So he had the most by far among the Braves, like, sixth in the majors. He's not striking out much. He's hitting, and he hits the ball hard to every field. I mean, he hits line drives to right field, to left field, up the middle. You know what? I was talking to Olson about that yesterday. He was talking about how great it is having behind him, because Matt said, I've left a lot of guys on this year. I haven't moved a guy over, and it seems like every time I do that, he bails me out and drives a guy in. But he said, he pointed out something great that that's the kind of thing hitters notice. I was talking about, he's got kind of a lot of funky movements in his swing, right? And all that, the feet and all that. But once he gets the bat in the zone, it stays in there a long time, right? And he said, yeah. And he goes, I think you said this. He said, the bat is like a toothpick in his hands. He said, we were talking about this the other day. And it allows him to wait just that tick longer on pitches than like most guys. He says, so he sees the ball and he could go a little bit late and still drive it. So that gives him that advantage. It really is an advantage when you got that kind of bat speed.
Yeah, look, I hit every day as a kid, but I was hitting in my front yard with wiffle ball bats and stuff. You know, when you have one of those, it's like,
yeah,
you could swing so late and just whip it through the zone. That's what he reminds me of when he's swinging probably a 32, 33 ounce bat, is how I felt in my front yard swinging a wiffle ball bat. Like, you just flick it with your wrist and it's in the zone forever, but it's going fast. That's what I see when I watch him swing. And Evan Gattis was kind of like that.
Yeah.
Gattis made the bat just look so light. Other guys, you could see how much they got to use their body to really whip it through. And Ozuna, it looks like he could just swing with his wrist. He's so strong.
Gary Sheffield was like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Gary had that. I mean, Ozuna, it's crazy watching him, because it looks like he could just got it right by his side, and he could just, like, he could maybe swing one handed and still hit a homer. He's so strong.
Yeah, he's strong, man. But I think to the naked eye, to the untrained eye, you would never be able to see the difference, what Matt Olson's talking about, that tick that he can wait a little bit longer because of his bat speed. But it's there, and it's why he can hit the ball so hard to the other way. And Olson does it too, but not many guys do it. You know, most guys are up the middle or pull. And yeah,
Matt, I see, like, leverage. You know, he leverages really well, and he's got long levers he's using to create that power. And Ozuna is short and quick and whippy.
Yeah, Acuna, when he's on, does the same thing. We've seen him hit line drives to right field at he went at Philly
140.
That was like 20 rows up in right field in Philly that I've only seen like Miggy do. as a right-handed hitter hit him like a left-handed pull hitter.
I saw Stanton hit one off of Medlin that looked like it, the second baseman could have caught it, and it was still going up when it made it in the seats. His rookie year. The kind of power Acuna has, though, at probably 60 pounds lighter.
So that was the good news today. That was a big development. I mean, obviously, another come-from-behind win. We've seen them do this so many times now. Today, they get a home run. Astros get a home run in the first inning. The Braves come back and get a home run in second. Then Acuna hits his first of the year, broke a 79 at bat drought. I think it was going back to last September. It was the longest drought of his career, and he hit it. That was a nice one. That was crushed. A big part of the ballpark center. So they have a 2-1 lead. Then Max gives up the lead, which he was pissed about. But we've seen the Braves do this. They go down 4-2, late innings. And once again, the bullpen comes on. Chavi gave up the home run that made it a 4-2 game. And then after that, after he gives up the leadoff homer, nothing more for the rest of the four innings that the bullpen was in there. And we've seen him do it again and again and again. Five relievers. Man, I got two big outs too. But the bullpen, they had that blip where they gave up all those runs in that series at home against, who was that, Arizona?
Mets. Arizona.
Yeah, every game in that series. But that's really the only... Other than that, they've been really stud. The ERAs are a little misleading because of it's so early and a couple
crooked numbers.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Like Pierce Johnson, that dude's been dynamite, but he had a couple of bad innings.
Hey, that's what's so stressful as a reliever. You can be great, and you give up a three spot. You just bit off a month of hard work.
Yeah, Bummer had another bad night last night. But, you know, his ERA looks ugly because he had those two bad ones at the beginning of the year. But I looked it up. He had actually had five good outings. And I talked to him this morning. And he's like, last night, that's the worst. When you come in, they had a 6-0 lead. He comes in the ninth. When they have to bring the closer in, he said, you got that kind of lead. And somebody to clean up my mess, because I hate that. But he said, I'm not discouraged because I looked it up. His ground ball rates are great. He's given up. His hard hit rate's higher than it's ever been. But he was getting the ground balls, and that's what he's here for. And he had like five straight games. So as Smith said, his stuff's too good. I'm not worried about him at all.
I think he needs to throw lefties inside. You know, just watching him. This is to get the elite lefties out, the really, really good ones, you have to be able to pitch inside, like a two-seamer inside, or at least show them you can throw a fastball for a strike inside. Because those good ones are just leaning out, looking for it out over, and he's got the hard cutter, the slider, the fastball going away from him. And also maybe pitch righties in too a little bit, but that's kind of the toughest. That's the toughest thing, but there's no reason with his stuff he shouldn't be elite.
Don't you think he's probably missing, though? I mean, he's probably trying to do that, right? Or can you tell where the catcher's setting up?
I didn't see him setting up into lefties. Okay. I saw him going in into righties, and the fastball I saw him throw into a right, he gave up that cheap hit, kind of like tied him up. But when you have that angle that he has,
right,
I think he'll be really good. It's just a matter of figuring out what works best for him.
That funky delivery, man. He like short arms. Yeah. Really, it's on top of the guy.
But
I tell you what, because he had the bad ERA last year, I looked at it on Savant. At his year by year, and he's lost like a mile an hour on his sinker every year for like four straight years now. And I know he's not a big velo guy, but it's been every year he's lost like a 1+ mile per hour on his fastball. He might have to, like you're saying, adjust a little bit, and maybe doesn't get away with what he used to get away with when he was throwing 3 miles an hour faster.
You can set up a back foot slider to righties with that four seam in. And when I went in on righties, I almost aimed above the belly button, like try to tie them up in tight, because they can drop the head on it when it's down. And then lefties, if you can throw a lefty a fastball in for a strike and they have to respect it, your slider's twice as nasty. That's when you see, or I mean, even better is the lefty-lefty changeup. I could never throw that, but the guys that can, you get ridiculous swings. But just when I watch him, you know, that sinker into lefties changed my entire career. And I was lucky because B-Mac was catching, and he knows how hard that is to hit.
Yeah.
And J.C. Romero used to just eat him up with those. So when I came over, he just started calling it all the time. You learn that pitch as a lefty. It's a wrap.
But I tell you, man, it's like we talked about how with this pen being so deep, they can go through stretches where like two or three guys are off and they're slumping, and it won't matter because there's so many. And that's the difference when they only had three guys that were going to lean on every time they had a lead or the game was tied. Now they've got legitimately seven or eight that they can use anytime. And
so many games are decided in those fourth through the sixth inning.
Yeah.
Because a lot of teams that are short, you know, they don't have that depth. They give up the extra two, right? And then if one guy gives up two, now you're going to somebody worse than him.
Yeah.
But if that first guy comes in and keeps it close for an inning or two, and the next guy comes in and you keep it there, now you're bringing in better and better relievers.
Yeah.
And soon enough with this offense, if you just keep it close, they're going to put up a three spot.
Exactly. And we saw this in this series against Houston. The Braves destroyed them after the eighth inning. Yeah. Three straight games.
Yep.
They got four runs in consecutive ninth innings against the Astros.
Yeah.
So
that's nothing new. We've been seeing that for years.
Yeah. And that's the difference, though, between a great bullpen like the Braves, a deep bullpen, and one that's not so, and they have to rest anybody in the Astros pen. The Braves hitters are just relentless. And you can't bring in like a lesser reliever to face the bottom of the Braves order and kind of squeeze in, you know, sneak in three outs against the 7-8-9 hitters, because their 7-8-9 hitters are like fucking Arcia. And, you know, and that guy's hitting 380.
Yeah, Kelnick's up there.
Duvall's got pop. Kelnick's getting lots of hits. Harris was down there. So, yeah, I mean, you just can't do that like you can with a normal lineup, you know. And the Braves will just keep going at it until they're going to pop one inning where they're going to get multiple innings. Crooked numbers.
Yeah, and just so many games get out of hand. And those top-heavy bullpens where you have maybe two or three guys at the back that you win every game you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Versus these pens that are deep all the way through. You know, there's so many games where your starter has a bad start and you don't even get put in a position to win after that. Yeah. You bring in the long guy. Yeah. He throws three innings, gives up three more, and all of a sudden it's kind of spread out where these other guys that are coming in, like if you're not a setup man, if you're another team's sixth or seventh inning guy, eighth inning guy, maybe not the eighth inning guy, but if you're the middle relievers for the other team, it's a big difference for those guys confidence wise pitching up two versus up six or seven. When you're up six or seven, it's just, all right, let's just get it in there. There's no pressure. But this lineup up two, that's stressful.
Yeah. And this lineup, they've done it so many times now. When they're down two, a lot of people might say it's still winnable. The Braves know it's winnable. They're like,
they're almost winning.
Yeah, they're like, we're fine. Down two, sixth inning. Yeah. All right, let's go, boys. Yeah. They do it again and again and again. So it just breeds confidence. Lineup depth too.
Oh, for sure.
And newcomers like Kelnick come in. You've experienced it like three times in the first week and a half of the season. You're like, okay, we're on, man. So,
and if he gets out, you got Acuna coming up. So it's the depth of the lineup too. Is you don't ever get that hole where it's like, all right, now we put up an easy zero, and there's only one inning left or two innings left. Like your relievers, every single one of them better be locked in because there's not a soft place to land.
Yeah, and the Braves bullpen on the other extreme is like Jimenez, Pierce Johnson, Iglesias had pitched and he'd warmed up and then pitched, had to use him. So we thought Snip might rest him today, but Snip was going to use him in that situation that he used him in. And they got a day off tomorrow. But you got Iglesias, you got Minter, who's pitching great. Uh-huh. It's just, and you got Bummer, who's, you know, like we said, the stuff's there. He's going to be fine, I think. But there's just so many weapons in that pen.
And they can all get people out from both sides.
Yeah.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of 755 Forever. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/forever to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYD healing.com/forever. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
I'm going to be honest, not really surprised, because normally when stuff like this happens, 3-4 innings in, they kind of go away. This one stayed, so I was like, this is not feeling right. And yeah, I didn't expect it to be broken. Obviously, it was like probably a really, really deep bone bruise, but yeah.
I think they're going to be fine. I mean, look at them. They're 11-5, you know? They've lost three. They had 8 All-Stars last year. 3 of them are on the IL. One of them is in AAA, Bryce Elder. Half the All-Stars they had last year are out right now. And look at them. I mean, we talked about Darius Vines, how we expected he might do something good because he pitched so well in his debut at Coors Field last year. He comes in against a really tough Astros lineup, and I didn't know if he was going to make it out of that first inning. It was getting hairy, but he did. He kept pitching, and I thought that was really impressive what he did after that first inning. Earned him a second start. They didn't option him. The next day, he's going to start Sunday.
Good. Well, and that's what we talked about. You know, if we hand you the ball and you do a good job,
yeah,
you're getting it again. And that's kind of the role. Is somebody's got to take it and run with it. And whoever comes up and gets the job done, you're going to get another shot. And if you keep doing well, then the job's yours to lose.
Yeah. And it helps they have the off day tomorrow, so they didn't have to have some length like they have had to. But yeah, they really liked what he did and wanted to give him another start if they could without having to make another move. You know, Snit said that's, you know, and I talked to Darius this morning. He said, I know it's Snit, because Snit has said that's a tough part. It's a tough ask for these guys to get them out of their routines, come up, sit around for several days, not throw some. Like Vines hadn't pitched in 10 days, you know? And Vines said, I know it's just part of it. I just want to help these guys win. I just love being here. I want to help these guys win. He goes, and I know from a manager's perspective, it's got to be one of the hardest things he has to do. Is a guy pitches well and you have to option him the next day because you need length. You have to tell him you're going down. He goes, I understand that. He's a smart kid. So,
yeah.
But,
that's Smith the worst Shaver, to be that nervous and do a good job and still get on that bus back to Gwinnett.
Smith Shaver pitched much better in his third start, by the way. Today, day game, 4 2/3, only gave up a couple of hits. So that's progress. They've got so much depth and they're going to need it all, but it's been pretty impressive how they've been able to so far. We didn't even mention Chadwick Trump. What this guy's doing, filling in while Murphy's on the IL, I don't think there's another team in baseball that could have a third catcher come up, and he's catching day games after night games. He's catching he's catching sales starts. And this guy's love him. They love throwing to him. You know?
I saw an interview with him, and I love him too.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
Chess player. Really, he's got a great sense of humor. He's been with the team since 21. And they've kept him throughout spring training every year. And he's also come up here when they've had Darno had the concussion. Murphy was hurt last year for a while. He's come up every time. And Snitz loves when he comes up and he uses him. But he sat in on all those meetings they have. Because this catching culture, we've talked about it here, it's really unique. Between Sal, Eddie is also a catching coach, not by name, but that's what he is. So they have those meetings every day that Sal, Eddie, Murph, Darno, and when Chadwick is up here, he's in there too. So this is a 5 of them, and they're going over all the hitters against all the pitchers, what they've had previous at bats. Then you talk to the pitchers. I mean, the pitchers all say you're so well prepared here because those guys, the hours they put in on research, you totally trust the signals they're putting down, the fingers they're putting down because they've worked, they've developed this relationship with you, and shown you how much research they put into it.
They're invested, you know, when you throw to a catcher that's invested in your success, not just his next at bat, and you can sense it. I've had catchers that I'm like, this is a bat first guy, you know, catching is just something he has to do to be in the big leagues. And you could feel that. But when a guy's invested in talking to you and you know, he did his homework and you know, you walk in at 2:00 and you're grabbing a sandwich, you peek in the video room, he's already studying.
Yeah.
I'm not shaking that guy off tonight. He's doing more work than me for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So that really helps at times like this too, when you lose a guy like Murphy and you know Trump from spring training and from knowing that he is in these meetings and does everything just like these guys are doing it and has the same mindset. They're all going over the same game plans. So there hasn't been a drop off at all when he's catching these guys. And he caught Lopez's great start night before last. He's caught a couple of Sale's best starts. And then he got the big knock. The guy can hit, man. He's got some big hits. And he got that line drive double to left field, drove in those two runs last night. So he's really playing well. He's going to stick. I mean, when he runs out of options, if the Braves don't, you know, sign him, if they don't have room to sign him, somebody's going to. He's going to stick in the major leagues. This guy's got some tools, got some ability.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. The more I see of him, the more I like him. And he reminds me of guys that you wind up in a situation where the Braves have control of you and the Braves have Murphy and Darnold, and you're not being a punk about it.
Yeah.
You know, every opportunity you get, you come up, work your ass off, do anything you can to help the team, say all the right things. That gets around the league.
And he totally appreciates the luxury he's had. I asked him, I said, has it been like graduate school? And he thought I had heard that because apparently that's what they've been saying. He said it. They've called it grad school. I asked him yesterday, is it like graduate school being with these guys? And he goes, you heard that, huh? And I go, no, he goes, that's exactly. It's like grad school, man.
Oh, really?
That's cool. Yeah. He said that, you know, imagine that as a catcher, you're coming up and trying to learn the ropes and you got Darnold and Sean Murphy, two all-stars, and you got Sal Fasano, who I think is by far the best catching coach that I know of in the major leagues, and Eddie Perez. You got all those guys to help you out every day. And he said, those guys have got me so prepared. He goes, I love those guys. And Eddie said the same thing about him. He goes, I love this kid, man. He's so smart. He wants to learn. And Chadwick said, man, these guys have taught me so much. I've loved being here. I tell people, the best part of my day is sitting in on those meetings with those guys.
Oh, I bet he's learning so much.
And oh, yeah.
You know, that's just another, you know, big plus for culture is being welcoming and not being threatened.
Yeah.
You know, Murphy's not threatened. He's going to share everything he can to try to help this guy.
Right.
And, you know, I used to always feel it as a reliever. You'd get into camp and you're competing with another lefty. There'd always be this kind of just energy there where you're competition. And I always just tried to believe like, hey, if I do my shit, if I get my job done, I'm going to be in the big leagues somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make this guy like me. I'm going to go out of my way and tell him how nasty his slider is or something like that. And they wouldn't want to like you. You know, they'd want to hate you because you're competition and everything. And you just stick to it. Pretty soon you wind up being buddies. But if you get a whole team with that mindset of helping each other out and building each other up, just so many good things happen.
And we've talked about this. This goes back to the bigger point. We've talked so much about the culture of the clubhouse. And that's where I think when people just look at let the kids play or bring in all this young talent and all that. And that's great having all this young talent. But the stuff we're talking about, these huge intangibles, is set by guys like Darnold and Murphy who are not at all threatened by they want this kid to come up and do great because their jobs aren't threatened. They want him to do great because that means the team's doing great. You couldn't say the same thing if they were young guys still on the rise too. They wouldn't know how to, you know, what is he a threat to my job? Because he makes a lot less money than I. And then it's the same thing with the rotation with Charlie, with Charlie Morton. He's 40 years old. He's not at all worried about one of these young guys like Smith Shawver taking his job. So he talks to these guys and wants them to be the best they can be and not have to be in their 30s before they blossom like he did, you know? Yeah. And Strider, he's talked to Strider so much. He wants these guys to do great. So that's the kind of stuff that you just can't create. It's got to be veterans who've experienced it and are willing and eager to share it. And they've got that like all over the team.
I learned so much more on the bus rides, on the plane, at the team hotel than I ever did at the field.
Yeah.
And you never know what conversation you're going to have. But the conversations have to be happening. You know, there's some teams I was on where,
right.
I mean, I couldn't believe I'm walking in from the bullpen and by the time I get in there's guys already dressed.
Right.
How am I going to get to know that guy?
Right.
You know, I mean, you're different when you're at the field. You're doing your work. You're locked in. But then there's other teams sitting around I love my years with the Braves for that reason. Like even after 2010, when we got knocked out of the playoffs, that whole team was there till 1 or 2 in the morning. Bobby came out and sat with us. But those moments where you're all just sitting around shooting the shit, you know, having a beer or not, whatever it is, a bunch of guys sitting around talking about the game that just happened.
Yeah.
If young guys are welcome at the table, you might hear Charlie say something that you take with you the rest of your career, whether it's a mindset or a thought process on a pitch or what he noticed with a hitter. And if you're just around it and it's happening, you can't help but absorb and learn so much more baseball than you ever learned just going out and playing.
Vine said, just being here watching these guys, the way they go about their business, he goes, and anything that I have, any question I have, they're like, let's talk about it. I mean, they're like so eager
for 20
to talk.
Minutes.
Yeah.
Let's dive in. Not just here's a quick answer, beat it. You know, I'm about to go hit BP, but let's dive in. I got time for you.
And I think Kelnick, we talked about Kelnick when he came, how I thought it was going to be perfect for him to be surrounded by these veteran hitters. So if he started slumping like he did last year, there's going to be guys that have been through it that are so ready to talk to him. And he's not a standoffish guy, but I could tell he's kind of an introverted guy. We talked about how he's kind of awkward and says the wrong things. These guys have so embraced him that I've seen him get comfortable since spring training began, even though he doesn't have that kind of personality that, you know, is easily, you know, they've made him part of things. And I thought it was beautiful when he, in the outfield, when the outfielders come together at the end of the games and they do the gritty. They do the gritty, and it's Harris and Acuna do it great. Well, Duvall and Kelnick are awkward doing it. And Duvall just kind of jumps, like makes fun.
Yeah.
Kelnick's trying to do it, though. And I asked, and Acuna and Harris, there's a video of them. They're both just like falling out laughing because he's trying to do it as he's running towards it. But then they all hug. And I asked Acuna after the game today, I didn't even get a chance to ask you about Kelnick doing the gritty. And he goes, terrible. Terrible.
Yep.
So, but that kind of thing, they've made this guy feel so at home. I bet he's more comfortable now than he ever was ever in Seattle in 3 years. I guarantee you, he's been here 3 weeks in a regular season, and he seems like he's totally comfortable out there, platooning with Duvall.
And that makes all the difference.
Yeah.
You know, that lets you swing free and easy. It lets you relax and guys picking you up. And knowing, I can speak from being in a bullpen, knowing that the guy coming in behind you cares about you, about your career. Like, he's really going to be upset if he gives up your runs. You're pitching that much more confident when you're facing a guy. It's like, all right, you know, if I wind up getting into trouble here, I got one of my best friends coming in behind me to bail me out versus just some guy that's punching the clock with me and probably, you know, looking at what he's going to make in ARB next year. You know, it's just such a difference.
Or some teammates looking at you like, yeah, look at Bonus Baby. You know, look at him sucking. We lost tonight because he didn't do shit. Well, that's not going to happen with the Braves. He doesn't have those expectations for one thing. And when one of them doesn't get a runner over, you never hear them. Like, you never see them rolling their eyes or like, yeah, so-and-so got, they just don't do that. So I'm sure it's a breath of fresh air for this kid, man.
I had this moment when I was early in my career. I won't name the player, but I'm jogging in from our closer's hurt and I'm jogging in from the outfield, and I'd had a decent year the year before. And I had a really good spring training and our closer got hurt and they're like, we're going to roll with you. And I'm already kind of like, shit, I'm closing. You know, I was 22 or 23 in the big leagues and I'm jogging in, and one of the guys did a double take. Like, what the hell are you doing in this game? It's a one run game. What do you think happened? Walk off bomb. You know, like that energy, you feel that from a teammate, you start questioning yourself. But when you know your teammates believe in you and like that Harrison Ozuna situation last year where a guy with tons of time in the big leagues comes up and tells him how good he is.
Yeah.
It means so much more coming from a player than it can from a coach. Cause you know, the coaches want the best from you, but when it's coming from a player and a teammate and a guy that doesn't have to do it, you know, he doesn't have to come say that, says that to you and tells you how good you are. It means so much more.
And I know some people probably get people that are more statistically oriented or analytics oriented or results oriented. And they judge things by what they see on the field, performance. I know they probably get tired of us talking about it and think, okay, here we go again. But we wouldn't talk about it if it wasn't so essential to the Braves' success, what they've done. You cannot overstate how important chemistry has been to this team. And these comebacks, it's not a coincidence that they do it better than any other team, that they never feel like they're out of it. That starts from the top. That starts from Snit being so relaxed and not panicking. They look down the dugout and they see Snit not changing his expression. People on TV are like, why did he get pissed off? Why didn't he chew the umpire out? Because that would go against what he is. He never panics. He never gets flustered. And they appreciate that. So, but the chemistry thing, though, You know, that's why they can lose a guy like Wash. And as huge as Wash was, it is so ingrained now. What these veterans are, they have it so much now that they can lose a guy and it doesn't change the chemistry just to lose just one guy or two guys. No. They still have it. And this is their window, man. It's not going to end anytime soon. But man, I think when they look back on it, they're going to look back at this period and go, God, what we had was, it was special because you got the talent and you got the manager and a coaching staff and a chemistry and a crowd. So you just got everything right now that you need to win. That's why, for their sake, they need to win another World Series, you know, so people can't look at, yeah, they won one. You won two, yeah. And it's like, it changes everything.
It's everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when Dean Smith at Carolina, North Carolina basketball, had won one championship. They used to hang him in effigy for a while because he never won another championship, right? Then he wins a second one. Then they play in the Dean Smith Center now, and he's a god at Carolina. But they had hung him in effigy for a while when he couldn't win that second one. The second one is always just so – changes the whole complexion in any sport when you do it.
Yeah, and it's so hard to win multiple with a group. Back-to-back's basically impossible. In baseball, barely ever happens. But – it is. It's kind of a crapshoot, and you can't judge it based on only winning the World Series. But when you are in this position every year and you're this good, you want to get a couple.
Like the Braves in the 90s. They had a special chemistry.
And the only thing anybody talks about is they only won one.
Right. Exactly. With Bobby and with three Hall of Fame pitchers, a Hall of Fame third baseman, a Hall of Fame future Hall of Fame center fielder towards the back end of that. Yeah, and they won. And Fred McGriff at first base, a Hall of Famer for a while. I mean, and they won one. And that's what people go, but they won 14 straight, but.
Yep.
So
14 straight is insane.
Insane. It will never be done again, I don't think. The Braves are going for the seventh.
That's pretty damn good, too. But you got to.
Nowadays, I mean, the Astros, we're seeing the Astros. They're having a down year when you think they're going to win the West every year.
Mm-hmm.
But you change managers, you change general managers, you change some of that stuff. But so. Anyway, all right. So it was they survived a trip without Strider, and it looks like they're going to be fine. And we'll see. I mean, they're always an injury away from things changing with one of the veterans, but we've seen them just shrug it and keep going. That's what they all say. It's next man up here, man. We hate losing. Yep. We're not going to replace Ozzie, but it's next man up. And I don't think he's going to be out that long. It's not like when he broke his foot. So he'll be back, I think, within a month. But we'll see. Anyway. Good trip. They got the Rangers coming up. That's going to be tough. Three-game homestand. They got a 9-game homestand. Three-game series against the Rangers. And an off day in there. So I think they're going to be home for like 10 days before they go on the road again.
Finally,
11 days.
Finally get moved into their houses.
Yeah, they got home tonight. So they'll have like 11 days to be home. Chance to make some hay.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, they got a damn good record as it is. The Mets are playing better, too. So they need to keep winning. The Mets are like 10-8 now after losing their first five.
Phillies, I'm not going to make the mistake. I don't care if the Phillies are 15 under in July. I'm not giving up on them.
Oh, they're too good. You know, the Phillies are going to be there. Three teams in the league are going to be in the division are going to be there.
Yeah. It's not going to be an easy division.
No, it's three legit teams. All right. We appreciate it, everybody. Thanks for listening. And hope everybody enjoyed it. We'll talk to you again after the weekend series against the Rangers. 7:55 forever. We are out. Somewhere else. Last year was the son of a